Hi, I'm Tommy, and I'm the host of Tea and Waffles, a guide to 2021, powered by Transmission Roundhouse. In this six-part series, I'm sitting down with amazing guests and opening the lid on issues faced by young people, hopefully providing some guidance to propel you through this messy COVID period, starting your 2021 the right way. Welcome to episode two. Glad you could join me. I realise this style of monologue is unlike anything I've ever done on Tea and Waffles. But if you're hearing me now, I guess the first one wasn't too bad. Since we're going to be spending some time together over the next few weeks, I thought it would be good to get to know each other. I'm sure from the last episode you gathered I'm a huge fan of trainers. Problematic, some might argue. But anyone who really knows me knows my guy is Big Sean. Deep town, west side, yeah, I said it, west side. But they're yelling big so much that you would thought it's Bed-Stuy. Am I fanboying right now? 100%, yes. And this is a wake-up call to everyone to check out his latest project, Detroit 2. No need to mention it. You're welcome. Do I bring up Sean because he's the GOAT? Yes. But on one of my many listens to Detroit 2, the lyrics to Feed, one of the shortest songs on the entire album, hit home for me and gave me some of the biggest insight into the 32-year-old musician's state of mind. In the 16th track of the project, Sean discusses his life, goals and decisions he's made throughout his career. Despite being a heavily decorated artist, he expresses after 14 years in the game feeling underrated, likening himself to Leonardo DiCaprio, who criminally didn't win an Oscar till 2016, whilst putting in performances some actors could only ever dream of. Sean concludes the track by questioning his purpose, and with that comes the realisation of comparing his purpose to another person's purpose, strips away the very essence of the idea, or in other words, it becomes no longer his purpose. This really connected with me as a listener, as I regularly set myself goals and targets for personal, financial, and work-related milestones. But I also find myself being set similar goals from society, but normally on much larger scales and way stricter timelines. I know I should take time and listen to Sean Don's last words on the track, disconnect to reconnect. But sometimes it feels like Dominic Toretto is driving that car that is societal pressure. And no matter what I do, I can't shake him off my rear view. In this segment, I sit down with John Okafor, a professional rugby player and fitness content creator, as we discuss the trials and successes he's had as a professional athlete, and also some of the pressures we feel as young people and creatives. I hope this episode can provide you with some steady footing as you try to stay in your own lane when you create your short-term and long-term goals this 2021.
I love setting goals. I'm a big fan of writing goals down, especially when it is long-term goals, because I feel like I usually forget. Me personally, I have like an abundance of short-term, long-term goals that I plan on achieving. And when I write them down in terms of like my life, when I write them down, I don't forget it. And I kind of remind myself, I'm like, oh yeah, you did want to do that. Whereas academically, to-do lists, like writing them down, I understand why people don't write down their goals, because it's kind of disheartening if you don't achieve them, especially if you set a time limit on yourself, which I used to do, but I realized that that is what would kind of be an obstacle for me. But after I stopped putting a time limit, I love writing down my goals.
Good morning, good evening, salutations people. You're tuning in for an episode of Tea and Waffles, a guide to 2021, powered by Transmission Roundhouse, having a look at issues faced by young people during this COVID period and some of the potential opportunities and risks that can be presented by this pandemic. Also, hopefully this can provide you with a guide to 2021 to kickstart your year. I'm joined here with a very, very special guest, John Okafor, who is a professional rugby player playing for Leeds Beckett and also previously playing for Harlequins. If I got that all right. And also is a fitness content creator. If there's anything else, just let me know.
No, man, that's it. Yeah, sports, fitness, and everything in between.
What actually got you into sports?
So, as a child, like growing up, even primary school days, I just knew sports was my thing. I just love sports. I love being active. You know, football, tennis, basketball. I can name five sports, including rugby, that I've played at some sort of competitive or decent standard or international. So, like with basketball, for example, I played England under 16s when I was 15. So, in year 10. So, I'm representing my country there. Football was in the academy system, got released just before I went into like big, like secondary school. Tennis, I've competed at county level, athletics, district level. So, like, sports has just been something that's always been in my life, and obviously now rugby. So, I can't really remember not doing sports.
Wow. You was a real all-rounder, sort of doing literally all the sports, tennis, basketball, football, rugby. Who was taking to all these events? Because the time schedule must have been crazy.
Of course, like, during, like, school times, you know, primary school, my parents were, like, taking me. Like, luckily, I've had supportive parents. Like, obviously, I have a Nigerian background, so, like, education was always important. However, I had the parents where, like, if I show I'm serious about something, they'll let me spread my wings and fly. So, like, okay, they can see, okay, I've got talent in something, right? How can we cultivate it, sort of thing? You know, I can remember, like, when I started getting good at basketball and football and rugby, like, you know how African parents be, like, they start seeing the dollar signs, innit?
Yes.
They start thinking, yeah, this is the star boy now.
Yeah, you can start chopping this one.
Yeah. Wait for, I'll take my 10% soon. So, you know, they've been really supportive. Obviously, in secondary school time, a little bit more older, so I was a bit more independent in getting to these things and stuff. But I think the biggest obstacle I definitely had in terms of these things was when I started playing rugby, because rugby's quite a middle-upper-class sport. It's not a sport predominantly played in the black communities, in the urban communities, period. And where rugby is played, you know, we're not talking a 10-minute zip Oyster card. You're talking an hour, 90 minutes on a train, 45-minute car journeys. And obviously, that's when it becomes a bit of a burden for my parents. Like, when I first got scouted and selected into, like, the junior academy at Harlequins, my first two sessions, I can remember my school PE teacher taking me to the gate, to training, to pre-season. So, and that was about an hour away from home, you know. So, like, at the time, like, my parents couldn't take me that and couldn't take me there. So it was a bit harder, and it's different when you start seeing other players, you know, their parents are just shuffling them around everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these parents have retired early. They're well off. The money's long over there. They're not struggling, you know. And there's me, 15 years old, with, like, my school backpack, some beat up Air Forces, white socks. You know, like, I just look like I've just come from ends, because I'm a man from ends, innit?
Yeah.
So, like, I was just there being myself. So, like, that's where, like, it's different from when I was in school to, like, growing up when I was in, like, secondary school.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you a question just on that, because
you
sort of spoke about the difficulties along the way in trying to follow what it is that you really liked doing. That not being of your own. You know, you come from a working class background, I'm assuming. So my question to you really is what sort of kept you going? Like, what made you keep going to training and wanting to play more rugby, practice, even though that there were certain hurdles in the way for you?
I definitely think the people around me, I owe a lot to my PE teachers and my first club rugby coach. She's like the only female coach I've ever met. Her name's Stasha Long. And my PE teachers, I can name them, Mr. Bradford, Mr. Lane and Mr. Henry, were probably like, outside, like my family were probably the four main factors that kept me in rugby. Because this is a time where I'm starting to see a little bit of success in basketball, right? In year 10, I was about a couple of weeks away from leaving the UK completely and emigrating to finish off my studies in a prep school in America, like scholarship, you know, host family, the full, what you expect, stuff you see on like Netflix series, you know? Yeah. And they were, okay, like think about it, you know, at least finish your GCSEs, stuff like that. And I was like, you know what, it makes sense. So they really kept me in the game. Like, I can remember like my first ever rugby game. My dad wouldn't let me go, period. And my PE teacher gave me his football boots so I could play.
Oh, that's like, amazing.
He gave me his football boots. I think I was like size 10 at the time. He's like, all right, cool. Wait here. Goes to the back. He says, she brings up three pairs. Try these on. I was like, cool, like these fit. And called my dad and said, look, your son's good. Like,
yeah.
If I didn't think he was good enough, I wouldn't even pick him. I wouldn't recommend him. Like, he's telling me your son's got talent here. Mm. You know, they're the people that kept me in the game. And when you start seeing small successes, like getting into the Harlem Queens Academy, like making divisional squads, county squads, you know, like when you start to get good at something, you start seeing the success from it. That's when you're like, you know what, let's pursue it. You know, you want to take more, you're asking more questions, you're trying to learn more. And they're probably how I ended up staying in rugby. If it weren't for those four people and them really applying pressure on me, I don't think I'd be playing rugby today. Like, I think I'd probably be involved in sport, probably gone down the basketball route. But like, without them, there isn't a me.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. I think that really sort of gives us a real insight into your character, and sort of really reemphasizes for me why I think you're an excellent guest for this topic, because I kind of wanted to really flesh out today what it's like to set out goals and to attain goals. And along the journey in setting out and achieving targets, you normally encounter hurdles. That's one of the main themes in which I kind of want to flesh out, because obviously it's great to talk about how can you achieve this and how can you set out certain steps to get to a certain target. But to really analyze what sort of things you can do to keep going when you stumble, and to also stay focused and not really have a look at what everyone else is doing and to stay within your own lane, I think is something a lot of young people struggle with, because obviously when you have a look around at social media and also societal pressures, it can become very, very difficult. So that's sort of some of the key themes which I wanted to hit within this topic. But before we get into that main topic, I've got a question for you, which I ask all the guests that come on the podcast. And anyone who listens to the podcast knows that I'm a huge fan of trainers. So this is a crep check. It's a crep check. But I do understand that everyone is at home.
I'm open barefoot.
Open toe? What, with the sandals? Jesus sandals?
No, just barefoot. Obviously, I'm in my room, so I just mean, like, I'm just barefoot. You can see.
You're lucky this is only audio. Well, since you copped out a little bit, I'll give you a second chance. So what I'm doing for people is that if you could have any trainer or any shoe, any boot, whatever it is, that you could be rocking right now, what would your selection be?
Just one pair of trainers?
Just the one pair.
Ooh, I would say, maybe the Air Dior's.
Air Dior's? You got money.
No. If you said one pair I could rock, like,
yeah.
But if we talk about what is affordable, or if I really...
No. It's just what you want, what you want.
Well, if I could get any pair, be the Air Dior's, man. I think it's just... Air Dior's. They're just top tier.
Yeah. Top. I'm with you. I really wanted to get them this summer, but COVID coming in.
Yeah, man. Like, me and my boy were going to go half on them. We saw the price and said, look, we're going to enter the raffle, obviously, in Selfridges. And if we... you know, get it. I'll bring my 1K. He was going to bring his 1K. Flip it. And, you know, enjoy the profits. But, like, God had other plans for us.
Even if you managed to get them, the profit you would have made off it, ridiculous. Right now, they're going for, like, nearly 10K.
That's what, exactly. It's like, we're looking at 4.5, 5K each. I was like, you know what? It's worth it. You know, I'm more than happy just to, you know, empty the savings to invest, you know, like, you know, creps are now, it's an investment now, if you know what you're doing.
It's like stocks now.
It's stocks, yeah. It's now like the stocks of the street.
Yeah. I like that. I'm gonna have to take that one. But yeah, no, that's excellent. Great choice.
I've tried to be an organized wavy youth, but in most cases it never really pans out well for me. For the most recent examples I can give you, during the lockdown that commenced in November to December, I believe, what I did, I had like a workout goal, and that was a short-term one. So what I did is basically created another calendar, and for every day of the week I would assign myself a little workout schedule or what I'd be doing that day. So then when the day comes, I'm not like, oh, what should I do today? Which for me anyways leaves more room for indecisiveness, which actually leads to improductivity and I don't do anything at all. For long-term goals, I've recently just bought a whiteboard. I'm going to try write down everything that I want to achieve long-term, and just I'm hoping if I look at it every day I can tick off things as I go on, helps me get closer to achieving them dreams. Yes, sir.
So we'll fling straight into it. So I kind of wanted to get a feel for you of how do you plan for your season, like as an athlete, and how do you sort of set up your personal short-term and long-term goals? Is there like a method that you go through to set that out?
So in terms of, we can really, if we really want to unpack it, because it probably starts in June. So the season runs from September to April if you end up getting to the grand final. And really the work starts in, for me, June. Like I'm a scholarship athlete. So I'm someone that is on scholarship. They pay for my accommodation and tuition. So I'm already in the gym maybe 2-3 weeks prior between main squad. I'm really liaising with the SNC department in terms of, right, here, this is where I am. Get me ready in terms of I want to do X, Y, and Z. And it probably starts with, again, probably the fitness, strength, and conditioning. So it's like just get my baselines and know where I've let myself go in some departments or where I've been like improved in other departments. And I'll probably do a 3-4 week block before like the squad comes in, of just like fitness, gym, training, all that stuff. Then we have our pre-season block, which can run anywhere up to 10 weeks during non-COVID times. And in that time, we've got like so much running, so much fitness, just getting stronger, getting bigger. Then halfway through, you'd have your week off. You know, I'd probably come in for like a little bit of top up and, you know, I'm one of those people, because I've been exposed to such a high-performance environment at Harlequins, that I feel like I'll be doing myself a disservice by not trying to maintain that. I've seen what it takes to be at the top. I know the sort of work the internationals are playing, like the guys, the England players, like Mario Toje or Owen Farrell, like the guys who are making that big money, who are like effectively the face of rugby in this country. Mm. The work they're putting in, so... For me, I need to do the best to emulate it in the space I'm in. Then the second bit of pre-season would come into more gameplay stuff. That's when I start thinking about my individual goals for the season. So in my first year, I just wanted to become a regular starter, improve, and just be a member of the squad. And I was fortunate enough to have like an incredible first year in terms of the accolades and stuff I received. So I had three man of the matches, player of the team of the season that year. I was up for nomination for a lot of different awards. I was in the running for coaches player of the season at end of year awards. So in my first year, it in terms of success, I couldn't have wished for anything else. One of my biggest goals I've been trying to achieve is England students call up. So in my first year, I ended up being on the reserve list, which was slightly disappointing based on the season I had at the end. I thought I'd done enough to, you know, earn my jersey and represent my country. Then this year, we've had, end of last season, we were in the middle of COVID, so nothing happened. And this year, I was thinking, like, last year, let's absolutely give everything I can into, like representing my country. At the end of the day, that's the highest level you can play in the student game. However, what is quite evident is that I've probably played my last game at uni. And it's now more of a case of, right, let's readjust our aims, readjust our goals and say, what now is a realistic goal and achievement for me right now? So, all the work in terms of setting goals probably starts in, like, around August, September time. And that's when I liaise with the coaches, you know. I'm lucky to have a coaching staff that fully back me, and having coaches fully like invest their time in me. Like, we'd literally sit down, formulate a 4-week plan for me, reassess it. And that sort of stuff, as a player, the amount of confidence that gives you and the amount of freedom to just go express yourself on a pitch, like, it's unrivaled. Like, I can understand why players, you know, like big boy players play so well, because when your coaches invest so much in you and you feel a genuine sense of belief from them, you're playing carefree.
Yeah.
Like even though I know that my shirt can always go to someone else, I know that ultimately it's mine to lose. I'm not there to, you know, some lads are trying to like impress the coaches to get like 10 more minutes, you know?
Yeah.
Like for me, I know unless I'm having an awful game, the coach will give me 80 minutes or 75 minutes of a game sort of thing, you know? So that gives you just such a level of freedom and confidence and ability just to go express yourself on the pitch that probably not since I was about 15, 16, I've felt.
Yeah. So in terms of you like having the full backing of your coaching staff, does that help you in the goal setting process?
Absolutely, because I know I can have honest conversations about where I am, and they will tell me what it's like. They'll say, right, you need we've noticed that you need to do this more or do this less, you know. Like, line of communication is just much more open, so you know, okay, 4 weeks, this is what I need to focus on. So mentally, you're already there in terms of, you know, where you're at and where you need to go to and what sort of time frame you're trying to make these improvements. Because a lot of the time now, with the goal setting thing, people, you're trying to run a marathon in an hour. Like, it's unrealistic. You're trying to do too much too soon. So with the goal setting, me and the coach will sit down and be like, right, what's a real smart, achievable and realistic goal for me to achieve? So for me, like, in a game, they would say, make 4 big carries a half. That means that's 8 carries a game. And we'll go from there. So mainly I know, right, every game, every 40 minutes, so on average, every 10 minutes, I need to be making a big carry, trying to bust the line, you know, a man down on his ass.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Like, I know on average I need to have like lots of impact, or I need to be every 10 minutes I need to be having a big contribution.
So you're breaking it down. So you're breaking the whole big target it down into smaller, manageable goals.
That's how I find the best way. If you can have something smaller, manageable that you can actually see in a realistically, that makes goal setting and achieving your goals so much more easier.
Okay, that's amazing. So like straight onto that point, you've just sort of said that, you know, breaking the bigger picture down into smaller, more manageable sections is a perfect way for you to achieve your goals. So yeah. I sort of wanted to understand, do you categorize your goals to help you sort of ultimately achieve your targets? Like, do you set them down into sort of like professional, academic, financial, for example, like sort of like general goals?
I think absolutely. I think now more than ever it is important to categorize your goals, because like everything's a bit of a blur. Like everything's just, all the days just seem to be just blending into just one blur of just, you're just in your house. So it's important just to categorize each thing. Like, it's got to a point now where I'm breaking up each day, yeah, and I'm looking at something each day, something that's going to improve me. Like, I hate home workouts. I absolutely detest them. I feel like...
honestly, a lot of people will agree with you.
Yeah, I detest them. However, I like the feet. I'm a man that does fitness alongside the rugby. So I like, okay, cool. I wake up in the morning, take care of a bit of an admin, and 10 to 11, I'm going to do 1 hour of cardio in my living room. And I know that I've improved myself by 4% or 3%. Yeah. I repeat it, you know, and it's just they're like setting smaller goals. Like, something that I was told is everyone overestimates what they can achieve in a year, but underestimates what they can achieve in 5.
Oh, so, okay. Could you break that down?
I'll break that down. So in a year, everyone thinks that they're going to meet the love of their life, save 10K, you know, go on 4 holidays, you know, bang out uni, get a new job, get a new whip, you know. And if everything falls in line, the stars, the moon and the planets all line up in one direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. That happens, you know. But that's few and far between. However, people underestimate what they can achieve in 5 years. In 5 years, you can get married, get a house, get a mortgage, get that new whip, go on that dream holiday, meet that dream girl. Mm. You know, I feel like a lot of people set long-term goals over short-term periods, but forget how much you can actually achieve over a longer term, but just by being patient, plotting every day, just grafting every day. And before you know it, like, if you walk a step every day, for 5 years, and you look back to where you come from, you're like, oh, wow, I've done that much.
Mm.
It's just understanding, like, yeah, these goals are, like, they are achievable, but just manage your expectations, you know? Like, now we're in COVID-19, like, you can't plan too far ahead, because even Boris Johnson and them, man, they can't even tell you what's going on tomorrow. And us... John Okafor, 22, in Leeds, is trying to plan for the next year. Like, you got to be realistic. Like, I'm just saying, as long as I'm getting my uni work done, little and often, staying fit, eating clean, that's good for now, you know? I'll accept that. Then, when I graduate in the summer, cool, get a job, go back to rugby. You know what? I can accept that, because I know right now, that's realistic. That's a realistic expectation. I understand we're in unprecedented times, and you know, like, this pressure to be the best version of you by a certain time period. Like I didn't think I was gonna be where I am at 22. Like, when I was 19, I thought, well, I'm gonna have a babes, have bare peas, you know, gonna have like contract offers waiting for me, this, that, the other. And something my dad always told me was, every time you make a plan, God laughs.
It's true, because you're not in control of anything.
Absolutely. You know, we're going to be in our third national lockdown. You know, like, they're talking about a new disease. You're seeing bad news. Mm. And like now, so like, you can't plan too far ahead. Like, it's good to have plans, but like, just not live for the moment, but like, just enjoy the now, and just like, just plan a little and often ahead. Like, you don't need to overdo it.
Yeah, You actually bring up a very good point. That was actually one of my questions which I had for you. Because I feel as a young person, I feel like there's constant pressure through social media or like predetermined societal sort of pressures to sort of hit certain targets and hit certain goals which are predetermined for you already. So I kind of wanted to get a feel from you. Would you say your experience is sort of pressure, whether that be societal or professional, do you feel like there is a certain idea of attaching goals to certain ages? Do you think that is outdated?
I think that attaching goals to certain ages, I think now more than ever, is an outdated concept, because now with like the advent of social media, it does a lot of good as well as a lot of bad. But like, you see a man, I can't remember the guy, but he started WhatsApp at 39, sold it for 11 billion to Facebook.
Yeah.
Like at 39, that man's meant to be married, paying off his mortgage, you know, a couple kids, you know, he must be a stable life. Like, obviously I can't vouch for his entire background, but he didn't think at 39 he was going to create a company or a social media platform that was going to go for tens of billions of dollars.
Yeah.
So this idea of attaching goals to ages is now outdated. Like, I can look, even looking at myself now, I know realistically speaking, COVID has now robbed 18 months of my career. You know, so now my career is 18 months set back. You know, I was expecting to have a couple contract offers to select from after I graduate uni. However, because I haven't played rugby for over nearly a year now, and it looks like non-professional sports or lower tier sports ain't gonna be coming back until September, August the earliest. I know that it's time to readjust now. Like, maybe that contract ain't coming until I'm 23. Before, I was like, oh my God, like, what am I gonna do? Now, okay, cool. I can readjust, I can reevaluate. Your goals can shift. Socially and society, like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter are like, they're the worst for it, because they're like the highlight reels, you know. I'm not gonna put bad things on my thing, like, you know, all you're seeing now, I can't believe what's going on in lockdown, but every man has got a babe now. Every man got a babe. I'm like, what? Like, I'm not every, like, I'm seeing bare couples living together. You know, people talking about like raw new jobs, this, that, the other. I'm like, calm, but I'm running my own race.
Yeah.
Ultimately, where my starting point and your starting point ain't the same. So, like, Instagram and all the social media platforms, like, take with a pinch of salt. Yeah, I don't really get jealous. I just get motivated now. You know, I see someone doing well, I clap for them, say, well done, rah, I need to level up. Mm. You know, I need to achieve my goals. Like, are you trying to be someone that had like the green eye of envy and did nothing about it, or you want to be a go-getter, a hustler and stuff, and you like want to like achieve something in life? Like, it doesn't mean you got to be a millionaire, you know. Everyone, that's another thing I think now that people think, like, oh right, everyone's going to be a millionaire. Like, realistically, not everyone can be a millionaire. Yeah. However, living comfortably, you got a lovely house, you got lovely kids, lovely wife, great, nice job, and a nice, you're able to, like, you know, not struggle in life. Ultimately, that's what it's all about, being able to enjoy life. So, society, there's so much pressure to have, like, all of these things done by 25. Like, I don't think I'm going to have what I thought I was going to get done by 25, and I'm feeling very content with that, knowing that I'm making progress towards what I want.
Okay, in terms of setting goals, I normally always split it up into personal goals, things that make me happy personally, and then professional goals, what would sort of improve my market price. So for 2021, it's to be fluent in French by the end of the year, and then personally get my motorcycle license and learn how to do nails.
Yeah, that's how I divide it. And that's normally my approach.
So I kind of wanted to have the conversation about inspiration versus comparison, because I feel like sometimes that can be a very thin line to tread. Because obviously it's amazing to look up to somebody who's doing amazing things and things that you may even want to do for yourself. But also it can shift a little bit if you're not too careful in the way in which that you're observing this person, that it doesn't become an obsession and it becomes detrimental to you. So yeah. I kind of wanted to have a feel from you. How do you sort of navigate that thin line? And how do you stay focused within your own lane and what it is that you want to do, your goals and your ambitions?
So I think inspiration is probably, if I was going to like quantify it or give it a definition, I'll say inspiration is seeing what others are doing, taking it and putting your unique spin on it. Comparison is probably has like connotations to jealousy, because you just want that.
Yeah.
You know, you just want that. You don't want to put in the work. I just want to be like that person. So for me, like, there's a, like, especially because I'm like doing like the fitness content creation and stuff like that, you know, there's a lot of people I look up to in terms of raw, like they've got a great platform, they've got a good thing going on, cool. So this is what works. Now how can I put John Okafor stamp? How can people now invest in John Okafor, not what they're doing? Then rather than, right, I'm just going to copy that and hope for the best and I'm just going to do it, and if I don't get it, it's not fair, and blame everyone else apart from myself.
Yeah.
So navigating that thin line, it's tough. And to say I'm always on the right side of that line would be naive to say, because there are some times where, you know, even now, like I'm upset I'm not in Dubai, you know. I want to be in Dubai. I'm with you. I go in there, I'm thinking through, I'm like, right, you're in Dubai. I'm like, bloody hell, like, everyone seems to be able to get to Dubs. Like, so, like, you know, that's a perfect example. I'm comparing myself, like, however, I know that, cool, you want to go to Dubai? All right. Are you putting in the work to go to Dubai, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you addressing your finances, or, you know, are you creating good stuff on social media, or am I putting in the work so that I can get my next contract and enjoy my time off, sort of thing, you know? So it's all relative, innit? You just have to be patient with it.
Yeah. So how do you prepare yourself sort of mentally to stay mentally grounded in terms of pursuing what it is that you want to do while sort of keeping out what everyone else is doing? Because obviously it's great that you can also always pursue your own ventures, but I find personally as a content creator, you have a look at some of the people who really do inspire you. For me personally, that could be like Chucky from Half-Cast Podcast. That could also be Milena Tolini and Audrey from the Receipts Podcast. Those are some really, really skilled podcasters. When you have a look at them, they sound absolutely flawless. They pull in huge numbers. So you look at that as a podcaster, as a sort of benchmark that you've got to sort of hit. And I think earlier on, I was sort of intimidated by that.
Yeah.
But later on, you sort of go through your own creative journey, and mm-hmm. as you're going through things and really exploring what it is for you to be a creative, and also going through like the journey where it's not always smooth. Like you plan to have an episode or whatever, and the episode goes amazingly, and there's an episode which doesn't go so great, or you have an issue trying to sort out guests, or you're thinking your page isn't growing as fast as you think it should, and you know, like you're just experiencing the journey that is being a creative. And I think then for me was really a point in which I realized that you actually have to appreciate some of these people who are doing amazing things, and also realize that they ran their own race as well to get to their point, but you need to run your own race because you're also going to get to a point in which that you're going to grow. But if you sort of stay idle watching someone else, you won't take steps in your own journey. If you've made it here, then you've just finished episode 2 of Tea and Waffles, a guide to 2021, featuring John Okafor, a professional rugby player and fitness content creator. Make sure, if you enjoyed this episode, to check us out on all social media platforms at Tea and Waffles Pod and join in the conversation. Finally, stay tuned for more topics, more amazing guests, and more importantly, more waffle.